Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
I can tell you one thing as a football official you don't want to happen is the massive piles up of humanity trying to figure out where the ball was. But one point in time in football rules, it was encouraged because that was the way you stopped a runner. We have author and historian Timothy P. Brown on to explain it from one of his tidbits of football archaeology coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome back to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are going to try something new here. We're going to have a visit with one of our guests that we've had on quite a bit on the program, Timothy Brown, the historian and author of some great books and a great website, Football Archaeology. And we're going to go and visit his gridiron expedition of the football archaeology and some of his interesting things that he's talking about. Timothy Brown, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, thank you, Darren. Appreciate the chance to be back. Chat again.
You have some really great things coming out each day for those like myself that have subscribed and are getting your emails. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what you're doing each day and that for people that subscribe through footballarchaeology.com.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, over the past 3-4 years, I had a different website and I published what I consider long form articles, which are, you know, 5 to 10 minute reads. And now I've switched it over and created a new site called Football Archaeology. So I'm still doing that, still writing the long form kinds of articles, but I'm also writing what I call today's tidbit. And those are just little, you know, basically takes you 30 seconds to read the thing. Typically it's going to have an image or two associated with it that, you know, there's just so many elements of the football history that it really helps to have an image or a diagram to help illustrate the point that you're trying to make. And so I spend a fair amount of time. I spend not as much time looking for the images as I do for the information, but I certainly spend a fair amount of time just on images themselves. And so hopefully I think people hopefully enjoy the images sometimes as much as the information that comes along with it. So basically, you know, as in the past, whenever I publish anything, it's out there on footballarchaeology.com. If you subscribe, you'll get a newsletter with the same information sent to your inbox, you know, as soon as I publish it. But I also put it out on Twitter and on Facebook under the Football Archaeology name. So whatever suits your method of consuming information, have at it.
Definitely, you can tell your research that you put into by studying the photographs is definitely apparent because it's a very interesting and, you know, pictures worth 1,000 words and you sum it up with another 100 or so after it. And they're always very interesting and informative. So I encourage those out there listening to check out Football Archaeology and subscribe because it's definitely interesting. Now, one that really caught my eye a couple months ago, you had one on when piling on was legal. And I was wondering if maybe you could talk to that little tidbit that you had a few months ago.
Yeah. So, you know, the picture I had there was, I think it was an Army-Navy game, but there was just this massive pile in the middle of the field. It looked like, you know, all 22 players were on top of the ball. And so I used that just to make the point that, you know, football originally, you know, the rules of when we had a dead ball or when the man was down differed. And so, you know, originally, when the tackler brought the man down, the tackler was to yell held, H-E-L-D, and the ball carrier would yell down, And that's when people would release and get up, and then they'd move to the next, you know, next scrimmage and snap. And so really it's kind of funny that held concept and the down concept still carries over today. It's just performed differently. So once the, and that's kind of the way it was for the first 15 years of football. And then in the late 1880s, they developed, in the English developed a whistle, a pee whistle that was loud enough to be heard by everybody. And so football and other sports started using the whistle to stop action. And that's when the referee really became the judge of when the ball was down or the man was down. And he blew the whistle to stop everything. But even then, crawling continued to be allowed. And so a man could be brought down by a tackler. And if he kept crawling and kept making what we would now call forward progress, the referee wouldn't blow the whistle. So, you know, he had to be down and held. Problem, of course, is that that meant people started piling on and there were, you know, as a dangerous element to the sport. And so with all the rule changes from in 1906 to 1912, 1910 was the year where they basically instituted a rule that said the man is down once any part of the body other than the hands and feet touched the ground. But it also the rule also required that the man had to be in the grasp of the tackler. So again, he had to be down and held or in the grasp. And then that stayed in place for like 32 years or so. And then the NCAA instituted a rule that said they got rid of the in the grasp rule. So that's kind of the basis of where, you know, the difference between college and NFL now, where if a ball carrier in the NFL slips and falls, nobody touches him, he can get up and run. Whereas in the college, you know, when he's down, he's down. And so the NFL, which was following the college rules in 32, basically said, we're not going to follow that. And then when they created their own rule book in 33, they just kept on with that, with, you know, they wrote it into the rules that the man had to be in the grasp in order to be considered down. And then they finally changed that in 56. And that's when, you know, more or less the current NFL rule of a man had to be down by contact in order to be considered down. So still, some part of the body besides the hands and feet touching the ground and down by contact. And so that's kind of the situation we're in fundamentally today.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great explanation of the evolution of that concept of, you know, the forward progress and a man being tackled in the down ending, you know, takes us right into today. So that's really interesting. And thank goodness, you know, I'm going to put my officiating gear on here and say, thank goodness it didn't go by the runners having to say held or down, because runners are not the most honest people when it comes to that. I can tell you as an official.
Yes, but back in the day, it was a game of honor. So
yeah, I'm sure it was. Sure it was. But you know, I read something once upon a time. The piling on made me think of this. Now, back before they had whistles, a lot of the people that were officiating a game had like almost like a little stick, or, you know, like a nightstick type of thing. And they would, I've heard that they would you know, like whack a couple players to tell them to get off the pile and stuff. Have you ever read anything about that?
Well, you know, I don't think I've come across anything indicating that they would whack the players, but the linesmen for quite a while carried a stick around with them. So before they had chains, you know, the linesmen often had some kind of a stick, or they in the rules they called it an iron rod. But it was, you know, they kind of plant it in the ground to indicate where that down started. And then they throw like a handkerchief to indicate where they had to get to gain 5 yards. And there's, you know, I've got a bunch of images into, oh, I don't know, 1930s or so of the linesmen, the head linesmen, you know, carrying a stick on the field. And that's, you know, a lot of them, some of them had that, the down box, you know, the square box that showed the down on it. Some carried that thing around the field. But eventually that, you know, that whole process got moved off the field to an assistant, you know, linesman.
All right. Well, but Tim, I certainly thank you for explaining that and showing this little bit of football history that turned into something that's pretty important to the game today. And we're going to do this every week. We'll do this for a while here and entertain our listeners here and expose them to football archaeology too. Maybe once again, you could tell us where people could subscribe to Football Archaeology to get the daily subscriptions and maybe your social handles if they would like to accept them that way.
Yeah. So it's just www.footballarchaeology.com. And, you know, I think if you just type in those two words, you'll find me through Google, you know, pretty quickly. My Twitter name is Football Archaeology, but my at sign thing is at FOFS. And then on Facebook, I'm not even sure what my Facebook name is. Well, it's under Timothy P. Brown, but the site itself is called Football Archaeology.
We'll make it real easy, folks. If you want to go to this podcast, the show notes, we'll have all those links in there that you can go to anywhere where Tim is that you can find him. So, Tim, thanks again, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks. Thanks, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.